I'm sorry about that, my friend, but we're dealing with our own weather issues out here. Thankfully, just rain and thunderstorms.
Oh, man, I can imagine. Could you send some of that rain our way, please?
Listen, when you get rain, you get it. It's crazy out there in the desert once the rain hits.
Yeah, we have the monsoon season coming up here. I mean, you know, I grew up in Vietnam. Monsoon season is a little bit different than here. It's like about 300 inches per year. Here, you get about a couple of months of heavy rain, and it's really interesting, and it's absolutely beautiful after the monsoon season. Everything is green and blooming and all. So when you make it out here, I'll be happy to host you, Rob.
I appreciate that, and it's definitely on my bucket list to get out there. So the ages of the victims from this, and you know, we were talking about the impact of this. This, to this day, remains the deadliest wildland firefighting in history. Wildland firefighting tragedy in history. They were from ages 21 to 43, with 43 being Eric Marsh, the team leader of the group. It's just harrowing what they've done out there as far as a memorial for these individuals. You know, the survivor tree that's out there, that you know, the famous picture of them when they saved that tree from a previous forest fire that came at that area.
You know, it's the saddest thing, and there was a photo that was leaked, and I actually posted it a couple of years ago, and everybody got mad at me. It showed the tarps where the 19 bodies were, you know, found. And I think at some point in time, we need to see those images so we can appreciate the sacrifice of these young people that you just mentioned. And I think that sometimes we have a tendency to bury images. You know, like I was growing up in Vietnam, I can tell you, I've seen things that are absolutely horrible that no child should ever see. But what it does is it allows me to appreciate freedom. And in this case, I appreciate the safety that these guys provided. And you guys too, as law enforcement officers, I think it is appropriate to memorialize these guys to allow the rest of the population to see these hard images. And I think I cannot tell you how much I appreciate their service because of the images that I'm seeing. I mean, you have no idea how hard it is out here to have to wear the equipment and the weight and travel up and down these hills to fight these fires, you know, by hand, literally. So I think that...
Armed with shovels and chainsaws and pickaxes.
Yep. And these guys are out there, you know, every time. And as a matter of fact, I don't think you know this, but my seatmate, Selena Bliss, is on the fire team. Her husband already retired from the fire department, but he just got reassigned to... out of state to fight another fire. So these guys, and Scott is in his early 60s, and he's out there fighting these fires. And so you just can't imagine. We're sitting here in a beautiful home with our air conditioning running and, you know, beautiful views, and we don't realize how many people are actually fighting these fires to keep us safe.
Well, the next time you're sitting next to her, lean over and tell her that the people in Northeast Pennsylvania thank her sacrifice and her husband's service.
I will definitely do that. But when you come out here, stay at my home, and I will take you to the memorial in Yarnell.
I appreciate that, my friend. While I have you on, you are also the House Judiciary Chairman in Arizona. With the changes we've seen at the border, and I know Tom Holman and that were out there and met with you guys, have you seen dramatic changes out by you in your state?
Oh, absolutely. Now, just so you know, the sheriffs, Arizona Sheriffs Association came to me and asked me to go and get $50 million for the sheriffs to combat border-related crimes. Believe it or not, a month ago, they called me back, and this has never happened. So I got the $50 million, and they actually called back and say, could you dial it down to $24 million? Because we're not fighting much of a crime rate by the border anymore. So, you know, when's the last time you see a government agency that call up a legislator and said, hey, give us less money because we're not doing as much? So in some sectors, Rob, you would have 2,000 to 3,000 crossover per day, and it's down to like 5, 10, 20. So it's very effective. Now, this could have been done 4 years ago, you know, in 2021, but it wasn't done. It wasn't that difficult to do either. But the Biden administration decided to purposely, you know, leaving the border open so that we have, I can't even imagine I can't even tell you how many fentanyl deaths was the result of the wide open border and human trafficking, sex trafficking, you name, all of those things have dropped down dramatically after Trump took office.
And just from what you just said, that enforcement down there, just in public safety cost alone, saved the taxpayers of Arizona $25 million.
Oh, absolutely. And you see that we're actually doing better financially in every sector, whether it's healthcare, education, you name it, law enforcement, you know, having people, you know, pack up the jails and the prisons and so on. Dramatically reduced with the especially with the deportation, and I'm all for it. Now, Rob, you know I'm a legal alien. I was naturalized as a U.S. citizen in 1983, and really it's a slap on my face to see these people cross illegally, receiving benefits and so on. Oh, and by the way, the benefits is actually not going to illegal aliens as much as it used to, you know, a year to 3 years ago. So It's great all the way around for all of us.
Well, I appreciate you giving us that update right from the front line, pretty much. We're speaking to Representative Quang Nguyen, Arizona Legislative District 1. He's also the House Judiciary Chairman. The anniversary of Granite Mountain hotshot tragedy, I have named each and every one of those individuals on my social media. You could check it out there. Representative Nguyen, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you. Take care, sir.
I'm sorry about that, my friend, but we're dealing with our own weather issues out here. Thankfully, just rain and thunderstorms.
Oh, man, I can imagine. Could you send some of that rain our way, please?
Listen, when you get rain, you get it. It's crazy out there in the desert once the rain hits.
Yeah, we have the monsoon season coming up here. I mean, you know, I grew up in Vietnam. Monsoon season is a little bit different than here. It's like about 300 inches per year. Here, you get about a couple of months of heavy rain, it's really interesting, and it's absolutely beautiful after the monsoon season. Everything is green and blooming and all. So when you make it out here, I'll be happy to host you, Rob.
I appreciate that, and it's definitely on my bucket list to get out there. So the ages of the victims from this, and you know, we were talking about the impact of this. This, to this day, remains the deadliest wildland firefighting in history. Wildland firefighting tragedy in history. They were from ages 21 to 43, with 43 being Eric Marsh, the team leader of the group. It's just harrowing what they've done out there as far as a memorial for these individuals. You know, the survivor tree that's out there, that you know, the famous picture of them when they saved that tree from a previous forest fire that came at that area.
You know, it's the saddest thing, and there was a photo that was leaked, and I actually posted it a couple of years ago, and everybody got mad at me. It showed the tarps where the 19 bodies were, you know, found. And I think at some point in time, we need to see those images so we can appreciate the sacrifice of these young people that you just mentioned. And I think that sometimes we have a tendency to bury images. You know, like I was growing up in Vietnam, I can tell you, I've seen things that are absolutely horrible that no child should ever see. But what it does is it allows me to appreciate freedom. And in this case, I appreciate the safety that these guys provided. And you guys too, as law enforcement officers, I think it is appropriate to memorialize these guys, to allow the rest of the population to see these hard images. And I think I cannot tell you how much I appreciate their service because of the images that I'm seeing. I mean, you have no idea how hard it is out here to have to wear the equipment and the weight and travel up and down these hills to fight these fires, you know, by hand, literally. So I think that...
Armed with shovels and chainsaws and pickaxes.
Yep. And these guys are out there, you know, every time. And as a matter of fact, I don't think you know this, but my seatmate, Selena Bliss, is on the fire team. Her husband already retired from the fire department, but he just got reassigned to out of state to fight another fire. So these guys, and Scott is in his 60s, early 60s, and he's out there fighting these fires. You just can't imagine. We're sitting here in a beautiful home with our air conditioning running and, you know, beautiful views, and we don't realize how many people are actually fighting these fires to keep us safe.
Well, the next time you're sitting next to her, lean over and tell her that the people in Northeast Pennsylvania thank her sacrifice and her husband's service.
I will definitely do that. I definitely will do that. But when you come out here, stay at my home, and I will take you to the memorial in Yarnell.
I appreciate that, my friend. While I have you on, you are also the House Judiciary Chairman in Arizona. With the changes we've seen at the border, and I know Tom Holman and that were out there and met with you guys, have you uh-huh. seen dramatic changes out by you in your state?
Oh, absolutely. Now, just so you know, the sheriffs, Arizona Sheriffs Association, came to me and asked me to go and get $50 million for the sheriffs to combat border-related crimes. Believe it or not, a month ago they called me back, and this has never happened. So I got the $50 million, and they actually called back and say, could you dial it down to $24 million because we're not fighting much of a crime rate by the border anymore. So, you know, when's the last time you see a government agency that call up a legislator and said, hey, give us less money because we're not doing as much? So in some sectors, Rob, you would have 2,000 to 3,000 crossover per day, and it's down to like 5, 10, 20. So it's very effective. Now, this could have been done 4 years ago, in 2021, but it wasn't done. It wasn't that difficult to do either. But the Biden administration decided to purposely, you know, leaving the border open so that we have, I can't even imagine I can't even tell you how many fentanyl deaths was the result of the wide open border and human trafficking, sex trafficking, you name. All of those things have dropped down dramatically after Trump took office.
And just from what you just said, that enforcement down there, just in public safety cost alone, saved the taxpayers of Arizona $25 million.
Oh, absolutely. And you see that we're actually doing better financially in every sector, whether it's healthcare, education, you name it, law enforcement, having people, pack up the jails and the prisons and so on, dramatically reduced with the especially with the deportation. And I'm all for it. Now, Rob, you know I'm a legal alien. I'm a legal alien. I was naturalized as a U.S. citizen in 1983. And really, it's a slap on my face to see these people cross illegally, receiving benefits and so on. Oh, and by the way, the benefits is actually not going to illegal aliens as much as it used to, you know, a year to 3 years ago. So it's great all the way around for all of us.
Well, I appreciate you giving us that update right from the front line, pretty much. We're speaking to Representative Quang Nguyen, Arizona Legislative District 1. He's also the House Judiciary Chairman. The anniversary of Granite Mountain hotshot tragedy, I have named each and every one of those individuals on my social media. You could check it out there. Representative Nguyen, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you. Take care, sir.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show, WILK News Radio. In the prior segment, before we were speaking to the representative from Arizona, when we were talking about the Wyoming That's in Luzerne County, Wyoming. I think I said Wyoming County. It was in Wyoming City in Luzerne County. So correct myself there. I do stand corrected. Thank you for the texters who pointed that out, that I did say that. Did anyone see this heroic video? And I don't think this is even a question that it would happen for anyone. A five-year-old child fell overboard on a Disney cruise on Sunday. And as soon as she went over, from the fourth deck, so it's not high, but it's high. Five-year-old child fell off into the water as the cruise ship was returning from the Bahamas to South Florida. Father jumped in after her, as I would assume and hope most fathers would. The Disney Dream was the ship. It was returning from the cruise in the Bahamas when the incident took place. The child fell from the fourth deck with her father jumping in after her. He was able to reach her, and they treaded water for about 20 minutes. The cruise ship turned around immediately, sound the alarm, person overboard, turned the ship around, and they dispatched crew tenders, which are basically little motorized lifeboats. And the two in the water treaded water for about 20 minutes, and the crew members rushed to save the passengers. Disney Cruise Line put out a statement saying, "We commend our crew members for their exceptional skills and prompt actions, which ensured the safe return of both guests to our ship within minutes, Disney said in a statement. The father and daughter suffered no injuries. I just could not imagine the terror. Thankfully, it was during the day. Thankfully, they realized it rather quickly so the father could jump right in. And I would assume any father would do that without even giving a second thought. And thankfully, they're both okay, but that's a hell of a story. This video as well of pictures of them two in the water and the boat picking them up and bringing them back to the cruise ship. But just an incredible, I guess that's a vacation story for a lifetime, but thankfully they're both safe, doing what fathers do. That's our job, protect our kids. And that never expires. So, hey, you win the prize there, and that's hugging your daughter again. It's 5:30 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 5:35, 81 degrees, Monday, June 30th. Last day of June. You ready for July? Birth of our country's coming this weekend. We're in for a great time, right? Gotta love this big, beautiful thing called America. So, this story was published yesterday, but Trump is calling for a Gaza ceasefire deal with Israel, as some Palestinians are skeptical, as well as some Israelis are skeptical. The thing is, though, I just noticed today, which kind of makes this story a little more believable, that Netanyahu is coming here next Monday. So right after the 4th of July. So does that give this a little more face-to-face time? Can Donald Trump give his case Benjamin Netanyahu that a ceasefire is in not only the Middle East best interest, but in far as the in total area, the Middle East as a whole, not just Israel, Palestine. So we'll see. But U.S. President Trump on Sunday urged progress in the ceasefire talks in the 20-month war with Gaza between Israel and Hamas. Though some were worried Palestinians were skeptical about the chances, Israel issued a new mass evacuation order in parts of northern Gaza. Now, mind you, although less, a lot less, there are still terrorists. Hamas is still very active in the Palestinian area. And the Israeli forces have made a promise after October 7th that they were going to eradicate the world of them. But with all the progress that has been made and the funder and supplier of Iran kind of neutered at this point, does that change the scenario? I don't know. You know, I don't think you're going to change the mindset of the people who have embedded themselves with the Palestinian people to create terrorism and use them as human shields and hide their activities amongst them. And until those people come to a conclusion that this is not what they want anymore, does it ever change? Or does it just pause for a couple of years and then flare up in 10, 15 years again? And the same goes for Iran. You know, did anything actually change? As long as that regime's there, no. The mentality will always be the same. Death to America, death to Israel, as far as not only Iran, but their proxies, which includes Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthi rebels, the Syrian rebels, and more. So am I glad to see Netanyahu coming on Monday, a week from today? Yes. Especially on the heels of Trump yesterday putting this out there and saying, hey, it's time to take the next step here. You have to realize Donald Trump, this administration's efforts are to stop it. You know, they made an effort with Ukraine and Russia. It doesn't appear that either side really wants anything as far as peace goes there. And you can argue that both ways. But listen, there is no incentive for the president of Ukraine to stop what's happening now. He's asking for unreasonable demands. You are not going to get Crimea back. The people of Crimea don't want to be back. So find an amicable agreement and go for it. Now, as we bring that into this conversation, there are also some of the biggest attacks of the war yet in the past 24 hours, as far as Russia hitting Ukraine. So is that any close to being over? Who knows? But one of the promises was he could end the war. Now, he overstated his promise, saying he could do it in a certain amount of time. Obviously not. Did he try? Yes. Were there efforts made? Yes. Did they fail? Apparently so, because the war is still going on. But his motive that there's just unneedless deaths on either side are valid. And you could agree with Russia or you could agree with Ukraine or agree with neither and think, you know, we shouldn't be anywhere near it. Let them have at it. The bottom line is people are dying needlessly because of lines and because of egos. So if that changes, we'll see. But it's a positive direction that Trump has called for a ceasefire in Palestine with Hamas and that Netanyahu is coming here on Monday, a week from today. It's 5:41 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Getting some information, there may be some police activity at the Wilkes-Barre Township Municipal Offices. Anybody has any information on that, please text it in. We'd love to hear from you. But looking into the sources now to find out what exactly is happening, but I heard that there were some sort of police activity at the Wilkes-Barre Township Municipal Offices. So as we look into that, we'll leave it at that. It's see if I can pull up the next story here. Jake, you got your headphones on here? This is your wheelhouse. So some Boston radio hosts railed against Aaron Rodgers.
Good.
Final season comments, and they basically called it a douche move. Live on the air because they said he's a narcissist that basically wants to do a farewell tour. Why would you announce that this is your last year?
For attention, because that's the way Aaron Rodgers has always been. He's always craved attention. I mean, look at how long it took him to make a decision. You meet with the team March 21st. You've said things like, like the New York Giants, for instance, they offered him a deal before they signed Russell Wilson. And Aaron came out and said, I would have retired before I would have played for the Giants. Yeah. You wait and wait and wait for Minnesota, you know, to go down the Brett Favre path. you're a Green Bay legend. You're a Green Bay legend and play your last year or two with the Minnesota Vikings. And then this whole deal, I mean, March 21st, and you wait till June 6th to sign the contract, a one-year contract, and you go on Pat McAfee's show, and Pat McAfee, punter for the Indianapolis Colts in the past, Pittsburgh native, so, I mean, he knew what he was doing. He's been on Pat McAfee's show so many times, and Pat has been known to smooch him and Tomlin's butts on there endlessly. And he says, oh, yeah, this is going to be my last year. And you have Pat McAfee and all of his people on there. They're like, we're proud of you. We're proud of you, Aaron. That's a bold decision. And, again, this is all for attention. I mean, he's even come out and said, oh, yeah, I mean, once I'm done with football, I'm just going to disappear. I don't want any attention. That's a bunch of bull, you know what, if you ask me, because Aaron has been this kind of person over the past couple of years, especially, that has just craved attention and craved the spotlight on him. And he had to love how long Pittsburgh coddled him for almost 3 months, let him take his time to make a decision. Oh, I talk with Coach Tomlin every week, and just hearing him inspired me and wanted me to come here. I can't even tell you how much I wanted to throw up in my mouth when I heard that. To say, oh, Coach Tomlin inspired me. I talk to him every week. Yeah, so basically he coddled you for 3 months, and that was your selling point? Yeah, so you could be coddled. So, yeah, I'm glad that someone sees it the way I do.
Yeah.
I mean.
No, it does. But how do you go out and have any – how do you gain any sort of momentum? When you said, hey, you know, I'm here for – I mean, how many games are they playing?
17.
All right, I'm here for 17 games, maybe. I mean, I don't think he'll make the first three without something happening to him. And I don't wish anything bad happens to him.
No.
But you're, I mean, okay, say he does one or two games and he does decent. Or, mm-hmm. I mean, do they end up pulling him? Is he going to sit on the sidelines for the other 15 games? Or does he walk away from the team? It puts so much, and I know this is your team. I mean, I really have no vested interest in what the Steelers do. And I think some part of you is saying, yeah, they have to hit rock bottom before they actually make some decent changes.
Exactly. I mean, he's 41 years old. I don't deny his accomplishments. I don't deny that he's definitely been one of the greatest quarterbacks that has ever played this game. I mean, hey, he beat Mike Tomlin on the biggest stage of them all in the Super Bowl. Seemed like it was about 150 years ago at this point. While I don't deny that, I also can't shy away from the fact that teammate-wise and person-wise, he's not a good person. And, I mean, you throw that in, you throw in his injury history. I remember he had a collarbone injury in 2017, pretty much wrecked Green Bay season. There wasn't anything that they could do. And also the age factor, and also when he tore his Achilles 4 plays in to his New York Jets tenure against the Buffalo Bills on Monday Night Football, you definitely think of all those things. And you think of he's been very abrasive when it comes to having Mike McCarthy fired on his birthday in 2018. When it came to the Jets, Robert Saleh, I'll tell you, and I'm not trying to be a homer here, San Francisco is going to bounce back in a big way this year. And part of that reason is Robert Saleh running that defense. I mean, I'll say that he's definitely more suited to be a defensive coordinator than a head coach. But Aaron, for whatever reason, I mean, he called the shots when he was in New York. He wanted Saleh fired. He wanted the general manager fired. And that's exactly what happened. And the thing is, yeah, if he gets off to a good start and they're 2-0 and they beat the Jets and they beat Seattle, yeah, you have nothing to worry about. But if you're 0-2, if you play like a 41-year-old quarterback, if you deal with some kind of injury and then Mason Rudolph comes in off the bench and once again saves the season, of course he's going to be on McAfee's show, and of course he's going to be throwing people under the bus and, you know, woe is me, like he does. So yeah, that's the thing. You have to plan for the future. And I know this year's quarterback class in the NFL draft wasn't really all that stout. Next year's is going to be stout. But how are you going to be able to put yourself in position to get one of those quarterbacks? Because the Steelers, when you're winning 9-10 games, you're picking towards the back half of that draft, you're usually picking somewhere in the 20s. You're the only way you're going to be able to find that potential franchise quarterback is to trade up. And yeah, I'm not trying to shut Will Howard down or anything. I mean, it was a sixth round pick, and yeah, he could be their future. But yeah, you have to look. You have to look towards the future. And again, Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan, Art Rooney, I remove all logic and reasoning when it comes to this team. You know, everyone was trying to christen them earlier today on Twitter as Super Bowl champions because they acquired Jalen Ramsey, who has been a loudmouth. They acquired Jonnu Smith. Jonnu Smith, who, why? Just because Arthur Smith, the two of them worked together in Tennessee. What are you accomplishing there? You trade away Minka Fitzpatrick back to Miami. I understand that move, but it's, again, I don't get how everyone just thinks that Aaron Rodgers and Mike Tomlin, that they're going to be God's greatest gift when they haven't, this team hasn't won a playoff game in almost 9 years. I mean, what kind of difference is this really going to make? And it never ceases to amaze me, honestly, Rob. It never does.
Yeah, I agree. And well, hear me out with the conspiracy theory. You talked about the power that Aaron Rodgers had in New York.
Uh-huh.
Who did he want fired?
Robert Saleh, the head coach.
Uh-huh.
That'll never happen, buddy. That'll never happen.
You think? I mean, well, come on. I mean,
to put it in perspective, the last time the New York Jets won a championship was 1968. The last time the Pittsburgh Steelers fired a head coach was 1968. They are so stuck in their old ways. They are so stuck in 1972. They still try and run things like they're 1972. And this team, here's the thing. Yeah, they could go 9-8 and yeah, no losing seasons. God's coach. They could also go 5-12 or even worse if the bottom really does fall out. Oh, we believe in him. He'll be our coach for the remainder, for as long as he wants. So it's a different culture in Pittsburgh. It's an antiquated culture in Pittsburgh, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and I think he kind of put himself. I mean, he put himself in the corner. You basically, I'm done after this year. I mean, obviously, anyone I would assume, you know, he's a player. He wants to go out on a high note.
Yeah, but I mean, they all do.
Where does he stand? You know, I think putting that out there ahead of time. Wait till midseason. I mean, everybody kind of knew you're at the end, buddy. You didn't have to announce it.
That's the thing, because he loves the attention. And there have been people in the past, like when NASCAR is different, like you have to come out and you have to say, like, hey, this is going to be my last season. Obviously, because of sponsorships, because of contracts, because of finding the next one in line for that car. With the NFL, I mean, Ray Lewis. I remember Ray Lewis, the right before Baltimore went on their playoff run, January 2013, this is my last ride. And that whole team, they rallied around Ray Lewis and they won the Super Bowl. Peyton Manning, here's the thing. Peyton Manning, class act that he is, Super Bowl 50, Denver Broncos, Carolina Panthers. Peyton, is this your last game? I'll make a decision afterwards. Peyton, Super Bowl champion, was this it? I want this moment to be about the team. I'll make that decision. And he made that decision a month later after the season was over that he was done.
All right. We'll leave it there. Appreciate your insight. And yes. I'm not expecting great things, but it looks like you're not either exactly. As we move forward. I am getting from multiple sources. Again, there is some sort of police activity or was some sort of police activity at the Wilkes-Barre Township Municipal Building. Something about the locks being changed. Still looking into it, but I'm hearing from multiple sources that there has been police activity there. Unknown which police organization, unknown what's going on. But again, I'm getting from three different sources now. Something about the locks being changed at Wilkes-Barre Township Municipal Building. And some sort of police investigation. So we'll hopefully have more than that tomorrow, but that's all I got for you now that I can confirm. It is 5:57 here at WILK. We'll be back. Well, that's it for us today. I'll monitor the situation in Wilkes-Barre Township, but that's all I got at this time. Police activity, the locks possibly being changed, so we'll see what that entails later and cover tomorrow. It's 6 o'clock. God bless. Be safe. We'll see you then.